This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new French film of Gods and Men is based on a true story of seven French Trappist or Cistercian monks who were living in a rural monastery in Algeria in 1996 when they were kidnapped by Islamic extremists. The monks in the film practice silence most of the day and spend several hours each day singing together. My guest Henry Quinson was the film's advisor on monastic life. He knew several of the monks depicted in the film. He lived in the Tamier Monastery in rural France for 6 years, practicing silence and singing like the monks in the film. What a contrast from the life he came from. He had been a manager at the International Markets Trading Department of a large investment bank. He got his financial training in London and on Wall Street. He now lives in Marseille, teaching in an inner-city school and working with poor immigrant families. Henry Quinson, welcome to Fresh Air. So you lived in the order, in the monastic order that's depicted in the film. Before we talk about that life, let's talk about why you chose it. You'd been a very successful currency trader. You handled a $15 billion portfolio. Just briefly describe what that life was like.
Very hectic. It was a very busy life, very interesting because in the 80s, all these new financial products were very new in Europe. So it was not just, you know, trading money. It was also explaining how these things work to customers. And so it was also very challenging intellectually.
Wait. When you say these things, are you talking about all the things that created the housing bubble? Like the securitization of mortgages?
And looking back on what has come out of all this financial innovation, I'm very critical. That was one of my problems when I was trading currency options. I had questions about, you know, okay, if it's just to hedge customers because they have to sail planes, that's all right. But if it's just to play like in a casino, I have problems with that.
So you're in this hectic life. You're trading derivatives that you don't particularly trust or endorse.
Yeah.
What was the turning point where you said, I want to get out of this life?
When I was a student, so it was really before I started working with the bank in the markets, I actually, when I was 20, I had this spiritual experience that was so strong that actually 7 years later, I came to this conclusion that I wanted to change my lifestyle and join a monastery because I thought, you know, the spiritual part of my human life was more important than a career or making money. And so that was really the core of it is, for me, the spiritual life was something that had to take the first place in my life. And of course, I could have decided something else. But at one point, I thought, you know, I want to change and go and try the life you can find in a monastery.
Can you describe what that spiritual experience was?
No.
Okay.
Well, it's not that I don't want to, but it's very difficult to describe, actually. I had everything in my life, and at the same time, I thought that something was missing, and I just couldn't get my hand on it. And at some point, I just went to my room and said to God, I don't like that name because it comes from, I mean, God, what is God? You have to define what God you're talking about. But this spiritual entity, if you really exist, well, could you make me understand who you are, or even better than that, experience who you are? And at that point, I was filled with peace and joy, and actually quite surprised by that experience. So I thought, you know, maybe this is just psychological. And I tried then studying different religious traditions, Judaism, Christianism, but also Islam, Hinduism, and came to the conclusion that, well, this was part of the human experience and that I wanted to know more about it, but not just intellectually, but as a transforming experience of my life.
So when you decided to leave the investment world and enter the monastic world, did your colleagues in the investment world, did your family think you were crazy?
Berserk.
Yeah, berserk. Were they surprised? Or did they see you heading in that direction beforehand?
Part of my family was not surprised because they thought that I was really moving in some ways towards something of that direction. then my colleagues, some of them were just flabbergasted. I remember one of my colleagues just couldn't talk. He was like, you know, a computer that bugs. And you would hear the hard disk, you know. So it was a mixed bag. Some people very close to me, only the people who were very, very close to me, understood that, you know, this question of spirituality, religion, that was something important in my life. And other people in the business were really in a state of shock.
So you decided to enter a monastery, which is a pretty extreme way of going about religion because you're so shut off from the world. And the monastery that you chose is based in, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's based on 7th century teachings by St. Benedict?
That's right, yeah. Well, you're right about the extremism. It certainly is extreme. Now, at the same time, monks who live under this monastic rule that actually has evolved in different ways because, of course, in the 20th century, people cannot live in the same way as they used to in the Middle Ages. But still, you have this calling to silence. It's actually not that shut off as people might think, because you always have this tradition of hospitality, and so many people actually come to the monastery for retreats. And in France, where I was at Tamier, it was something like more than 100,000 people every year. So it's a lot of people
okay.
come to the monastery.
More visitors than I have.
Yeah, right. Of course, the monks are the community is not in interacting with all these people all the time. Some of them are in charge of retreats, etc. But still, there's a relationship with connection with the world that is stronger than people might believe.
So just curious, when you walked away from the financial world and you entered the monastery, what happened to all the money you had as an investor?
Well, most of it I just gave to charities, although I don't really like to talk about that because, you know, that's something I should keep for myself. But you asked me the question, I have to answer. And so, yeah, the idea is that, you know, we should be living a simple life. And so that was easy to solve.
Are you giving away money? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most difficult is how do you embrace a new life? Because that's the real part of it, and that's the personal part of it. And, you know, changing from one life of very hectic life, you know, connected to all the different financial markets, and suddenly being plunged into a life that is very, very silent. Also with 35 brothers who come from different walks of life and making cheese instead of dealing currency options, that was quite a change.
That was the occupation, making cheese?
Yeah, that was part of it, yeah.
So you spent 6 years in a monastery in which the monks were expected to spend a lot of the day in silence, but about 4 hours a day were spent singing as a group, singing hymns and spiritual songs. What is the importance of singing in that order?
Yeah, 4 hours is a lot. Some people told me that people who singers, professional singers, do not actually sing 4 hours a day. Something like, I think it's 15% of the words that you can actually hear in that movie are songs. So I think it's an experience, a human experience, not necessarily a religious one, but a human experience that people can actually share in, that if you sing together, there's a harmony, there's a unity that is physical. I mean, you are actually breathing together. And so a community is going to be stronger if every day you're able to sing together. Of course, in the case of monastic life, singing together is also a prayer. But the fact is that it's at the same time a human experience. Singing together is a human experience. And at the same time, it's sharing in what really brings you together. And that's, I think, one of the major points in both in the real life of the monks of Tibirine and also in the movie.
I want to play a song featuring monks singing, and these are the monks in the abbey where you lived for about 6 years, the Abbey de Tamier.
Right.
And this is a song that plays over the close credits of Gods and Men. And it's Au Père de Lumière, yeah. Father of Light. So let's hear the monks of the Abbey de Tamier singing Au Père de Lumière, Father of Lights.
Sure.
Singing. Were you one of the monks singing in that recording?
I was, which was so strange to me because 14 years later, after the death of these brothers, I was actually with the whole team of the movie at Cannes listening to my own voice in this place where, you know, there was no reason to have us sing, you know. And so it was very, very strange and so refreshing because to me it's a kind of miracle.
So you spent about 6 years in a monastery in France, a rural monastery dedicated to silence, spending 4 hours a day singing, and then you left. And you left the monastery to work in an inner-city neighborhood in Marseille, France, in a largely Muslim neighborhood. Why did you leave a rural monastic life to work in the inner city?
Well, before I joined the monastery of Tamier, I actually had a vision, which only happened once in my life. And I saw myself, I was still in Paris then, I just had, you know, resigned from my bank. And I saw myself in Marseille. And so I thought it was just so strange to see myself in Marseille with kids apparently coming from the other side of the Mediterranean. And so at one point when I was in Tamier, and probably the story of Tibirine was part of my struggle, I started thinking, you know, it's just so important to have people who are different living together and not only just stay among Christians among Christians, but have a community in a Muslim neighborhood, majority Muslim neighborhood. And that's how I ended up in Marseille in a very strange way, because I didn't really decide to go to Marseille, but at some point somebody said, you know, maybe you should go and see in Marseille because there's a small community of sisters there. And I thought, you know, what am I going to do with sisters? And then it all started like that with Karim de Bouquin, who was someone from Marseille who came himself from Algeria. And so we started up this little fraternity, and that's how things started in 1996, just after the beheading of our brothers of Tibirine. So it was like a continuation, and I thought, you know, it's probably the best way to keep up the good work and continue this kind of, I don't know if it's a real monastic life because it's much more open to the outside world. Who cares? I mean, I don't really care about it. It's just, you know, a life of prayer, work, and hospitality and the context of poor and mostly Muslim people.
So when you were living in the rural monastery, the monks made cheese, and I imagine that's part of the way the monks supported themselves. I guess now you have a teacher salary?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So I think part of the reason for like a rural monastery is the understanding that in the natural world you could get closer to the presence of God or more fully experience the presence of God. So in moving from like the natural world, you know, being in nature, to the inner city, to concrete, to, you know, crowded buildings, lots of commotion, do you feel like you've moved any further from God because you're not in nature?
I surely not. I think it's very interesting because this theme of the desert, going to a place where nobody lives, because it all started in Egypt, where people Christians would go and find solitude in the deserts in Egypt. And then when this monasticism came to Europe, actually the place was, you know, was not a desert. So people would go to rural areas. And then what happened is that many cities started to develop around the monasteries, because they were also centers of culture, economic life. And I think there's always a new definition of what the desert is. And today, many people don't want to go to inner city areas because they find it crowded. Maybe they find more violence than other places. And so you could view that also as a desert, not in the sense that you don't have any noise, because it could be very noisy, but that nobody wants to live there. Nobody wants to live in a desert, and probably not many people want to live in inner city areas, but would go to suburbia. I think it's more about the your inner motivations rather than just what is visible.
Since you've been teaching for years and have lived in the inner city, and your home, whether it's been in the housing project or in the church, has been open to helping people with various things, so you've had a lot of interactions. Are you ever too busy to do the kind of prayer and silence or meditation that became such an important part of your life? Is it hard to find the time now that you live back in the world?
I wouldn't say that. No, what I have actually moved to is a different way of doing things. For example, I spent I think 14 years without driving a car, and now I have to drive a car just to go to various places. And what I do is I pray in my car, so I have some of these psalms and singings that I can listen to, and I sing with them, and so it's that is different compared to what I used to do before.
Wait, I'm going to stop you. Can you multitask while you pray? I mean, is that acceptable?
Well, for me it is, but I mean, sure, it doesn't mean that I don't take some time off and really give, I mean, all my time and all my body is silent and resting in prayer, but. But also, I think there are different ways you can connect in prayer, and certainly this is one of the new ones you can have in the modern world, is that you can really also listen to a radio and pray with other people over the radio. So it really is a new way of connecting with other people in prayer, and I think it would be just simply stupid not to join in, and that is certainly new for me. But it's really in line with what I've been doing over the years.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Henry Quinson served as an advisor for the new film Of Gods and Men. Coming up, Ken Tucker reviews Adele's second album. This is Fresh Air.